Good morning. It's around 1 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Today is Bastille Day. On this day, in 1863, the people of Paris murdered Elvis. Yes, today is Bastille Day. On this day, July the 14th, 1863. On this date, the people of Paris, enraged by the gyration of Elvis's crotch, they stormed the stage with rocks and rotten fish and rotten tomatoes. They tossed the tomatoes and the fish and the rocks at Elvis. They beat him pretty much to death. And then they took his body and they erected it on a pike in front of the famous Bastille prison. Yes, indeed, you may think this is for something else, but it's for Elvis. He had to die. Elvis had to die. Elvis had to die. That was the only way the ancient witches would be released. And from those witches would come the spells that would bring forth the 20th century. But as of right now, it is July the 14th, around 1 a.m. 1 a.m. Mountain Standard Utah time. Good, clean, alfalfa field Utah time. And this particular podcast is not intended to be a broadcast. So there's no need discussing frequencies and stations and swamps in Florida. But Elvis is dead. Elvis is dead. The French killed him. They beat him. They erected him on a pike. It's Bastille Day. It's Bastille Day. Why did you kill him? Is the question we ask the French. But it's Bastille Day. I'm kidding, right? On July the 14th, 1789, World War II began. No, I'm kidding. On July the 14th, 1789, the nasty, brash, smelly, covered in fleas and ticks, peasants of France and Paris stormed the prison of Bastille. They had pitchforks and probably wooden bats and all kinds of makeshift weapons. They probably had shivs and knives and rusty swords. They stormed the Bastille with whatever weapons they could find. And there actually weren't that many prisoners at the time. So in some ways, in fact, in many ways, if you analyze how many prisoners they found, Bastille Day is a lot like the Lost Vault. We're talking Geraldo Rivera. The Lost Vault of Al Capone. What a disappointment. What a nothing burger. Where do we go from here? Yeah, July the 14th, the peasants of Paris storm the Bastille prison. And, you know, it's got a moat and a bridge, and it's all very dramatic. But in truth, as I recall from my French history class, my French Revolution history class from the year 1989, Bob Limpdock. Yeah, that was a long time ago. It's a long time ago. I think it was 1989 I took this class, and we talked about the storming of the Bastille. And yes, it's dramatic, and yes, it's haughty, and yes, it represents a life. It's a nice demarcation line. This is the day the French Revolution begins. But in reality, the storming of the Bastille is a lot like the Lost Balls of Al Capone. And if you weren't a kid in the 80s, you weren't a kid in the 80s. If you weren't a young man or a young woman or a young Zed in the 80s, you wouldn't understand. But if you were a young man or woman or Zed or gender quadro Zed or Fortress X-17, whatever your gender is, I don't know. But back in the 80s, they really did this big, big, just total publicist, you know, huge campaign to get people excited about the lost vault of Al Capone. It was going to be a vault. It was going to be opened by Geraldo Rivera. And inside the vault were going to be the treasures and the bodies and the hookers and the old cocaine and all the good stuff in the vault. Machine guns, Tommy guns, 45 ACP, you got Colt 1911s, you probably have some gangster in his zoot suit with a Colt in his bony hands because he's bones by now, but he's holding that Colt in some sort of a, you know, some sort of stance. Maybe he was set up that way. In punishment, who knows? Nobody knows but Al Capone. But when they opened Al Capone's vault, when we peered inside of that dank, dirty little compartment space in the foundation of some abandoned building where crack whores are just recently, you know, raising their families. When they cracked open the foundation of that rotty, naughty, terrible location, that place in Chicago filled with rats and roaches and who knows what else. I think it was Chicago. It could have been someplace else, probably Chicago. And they open up Al Capone's lost vault. And there are supposed to be billions of dollars and gold and diamonds. There's supposed to be gold and diamonds and all kinds of loot, all kinds of riches, riches that would make you powerful if you had Al Capone's lost riches. You could murder Elvis. If you had the lost riches of Al Capone. And just FYI, this, as far as planetary status reports go, This is another one of those probably won't be on the radio anytime soon podcasts. This is just me, no outline, just spitballing. It's July the 14th, so let's talk about Bastille Day. That day in 1974, when Elton John killed Elvis. Nope, Elton John didn't kill Elvis. We don't know. We really don't know. He could have killed Elvis. I think that the evidence for it is very weak, but we should probably, you know, put together a panel. We should impanel a star chamber of researchers and hired killers and people that dig ditches and other folks that are good with welding torches and making bats out of nails and old lumber. And lumber ain't cheap, even if life is. Yes, indeed, Bastille Day, the original Al Capone's vault, because when you open that thing up, it was just dirt and garbage and gumpus and nothing, and Geraldo Rivera, and I think they did it live, or at least live-ish. And Geraldo Rivera's got that look on it. Well, if we keep digging in the dirt, we'll find it. We'll find it somewhere in the dirt is Al Capone's magical wealth. Somewhere deep below the ground is Al Capone and his spirit animal. Bastille Day. So I had a big bag of coins. I had a bag of coins today. Like, you ever get like a bag of coins? You've been using cash because you're racist. You've been using cash or some sort of tradable good item. If you weren't racist, you'd use crypto or you'd just use the digital thing and you wouldn't think about it, animal. But you've been using cash. So you got pennies and nickels and dimes and a few quarters in a big bag. And of course, the number one racketeer when it comes to coins, I think, in the United States is Coinstar. I remember doing a podcast. I think you could find the video on my website if you go to dfgtc.org, click through the homepage, go to videos, it should be pretty obvious. And somewhere in 2014, if you just do Control F and do a whole 2014 search, somewhere in 2014, I think October, November, probably December, I think December, because I think I was going on a business trip, it could have been September. And I had a big bag in late 2014 of these coins. So I go to Coinstar. And Coinstar, it says right there, we take 10%. You know, we take 10%. You give us a dollar, we give you back 90 cents. We take a dime. And fine. It's crooked, probably. It's a mess, probably. Someone will make an argument, but Dan, they've got all kinds of... I know they got transactional costs and cleaning costs. But at this point, I think the whole money game with respect to the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury is a gigantic racket. So paying 10% to get back, you know, giving you a dime so I can get back 90 cents, it does seem like kind of a crooked thing. But that was 2014. That was the year 2014, the year... wow, what a great year. That was a great year. The year I fled Seattle the second time, or the third time. And every time I fled Seattle, I shake my fist in the sky. I scream to the sky, say, sky, sky captain, sky lord, sky master, I shake my fist and I am leaving Seattle forever. But then there's that dread gravitational pull. It kind of sucks on you. It's like got tendrils, like a jellyfish. It puts its spikes into you. Spikes of poison and pain. Those spikes eat away at you. They eat away at your soul. It screams Seattle. It's where they murdered Kurt Cobain. Where they murdered Kurt Cobain. Yeah, back to the core topic though. So I had to beg a change because the last few weeks I've been using cash. I've been going to places and buying things with cash, and that's so very racist given the coin shortage. What I find interesting about the coin shortage, if I may go off another tangent as I drink my coffee, what I find intriguing about the whole coin shortage is that we still have all the metals, all the nickel and the cadmium and all the other crap metals we use to make bombs and bullets. We still have all the metals to drop bombs and bullets, but we can't make coins. Does any of this make any sense to any of you, really? It all looks pretty crooked. So I go to the one coin star near where I live. I go to that coin star with my bag of coins. I go up to the machine and I press the screen and I say, machine, here's my bag of coins. Here's my bag of sadness. That's a crusty booger. That's dried blood. That's a grease stain from where the hooker played with it. That's a quarter they left on the street. That's a nickel they fired out of their wrist rocket, and they hurt that guy. And here's the coins. And so the coin star machine does its thing. Shake, rattle, and roll, you know. And it processes the coins. And it takes 6%, and I thought, well, that's less than 10%, so I feel less crappy. It's 6%, and I get my cash voucher, and I go up to the teller, because this particular Coinstar is at a credit union. It's at a credit union, you know what I mean? This particular coin stars at a credit union, Mountain Valley, Mountain Crab Tree, the Utah Credit Union of Genital Crabs. I go to the teller, here's my voucher, $33.45, give me my money. And she just says, okay, are you a member of our credit union? No, ma'am, I'm not a member of your credit union. I just use that Coinstar machine. And well, you're gonna have to pay $2. Yeah, $2. Thank you. Yeah. You know what I mean? When they say things like, Dan, that's crazy. $2, $2. I have a voucher in my hand from the wretched machine that has already grifted me of, you know, 6 pennies for every dollar. Fine. Take your pennies for Bastille Day. Give those pennies to the local fishmonger. Get your hagfish or lamprey. Make your lamprey stew and feed that to Elvis in jail. Do that for me, buddy. $2. Like, imagine if I was a kid. I got a jar of coins. I got to take them somewhere. I go to the Mountain Credit Union, blah, blah, blah. And I have a voucher for $5. No, better yet, $3. Here's $3 voucher. And the woman says, well, you know, are you a member? No, I'm not a member. I'm just a kid with a bunch of pennies. Can I get my $3? Oh yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. I'll give you $1 if you give me the voucher. And the kid is gonna shake his or her head. They're going to imagine they'd just been murdered. This is a big deal to a kid. Money, you know, kid, and I go to this credit union, I take my $3 of coins, no, better yet, $4 in coins, roughly, and I get a voucher back for $3 and change because the machine grifted me, and I take my $3 and change to the teller at the credit union, and I'm just a kid, and all I got is that money for mowing the lawn, but at least I've got the $3, and I go, teller, Here's the voucher. I just fed the machine. It just stole from me. And the teller says, well, kid, are you a member of our credit union? Well, the machine didn't say that, ma'am or sir. It simply said I'm going to take 6 pennies for every buck you put into the coin hopper. And the woman, teller, man, teller, sir or ma'am says, well, since you're not a member... Since you're not a member, we have to take $2. But here's $1.50 and a slap across the face for realizing that you are a chump. There's a coin shortage, which means in theory, I should have gotten paid today. For giving them coins. They say there's a coin shortage, but I got screwed. Welcome to the system. A neo-Stalinist Death Star hellhole, but at least you got a coin star to take that bag of coins and turn it into money. That's good. I know that's an awfully ridiculous rant, you know, and so many ways to go off on a tangent about that crap. But like I said, this is not a for-broadcast podcast. This probably won't end up on shortwave, so I can say fuck and bullshit without any real concern. And I gotta say fucking bullshit. you know? $2. They tell you there's a coin shortage. A lot of the same metals you need for coins go into the military industrial complex. So if there were a frickin' coin shortage, shouldn't there be a tank shortage and a bullet shortage and a rifle shortage? There's a whole bunch of materials that overlap here. So I guess we have plenty of metals for blowing people up, but not enough metals so people can conduct business. But if there is a coin shortage, then why in the world would this credit union charge me $2? I mean, if they're running that wretched machine, which clearly they are, because they're taking 2 vigs off the top or whatever you want to call it, and there's a coin shortage, wouldn't they say, well, listen, buddy, normally we charge you $2, and that's kind of crappy because you're not a member. But there's a coin shortage, so we have policy from the bank or the credit union. And they've told us, listen, there's a shortage of coins. And so just waive it. Waive the $2. Waive the fee. That is what you would, if this stuff was real, if there was an actual coin shortage, if they didn't have enough coins to make change, they would waive the fee. That's not what's going on. I don't know for certain what's going on in this wretched Soviet Union of the United States of America, of communism and crapola, but I do know the coin shortage story is just as much BS today as it was 7, 8, 9 months ago. So I guess we'll find out the real reason at some point. But enough ranting. They got the $2. I feel like riding by my trike tomorrow. You know, I bought a trike, a used tricycle. Recently, a used adult tricycle, and I feel like riding by tomorrow and saying, I want my $2. I want my $2. Give me my $2. You guys are Utah scum. I'm going to steal your cattle. I'm going to steal your cat. I'm going to make gato tacos. Figure that out. Screw you, right? Yeah, so I bought that adult tricycle. It's still working out. I planned on exercising more by using it because it gets so hot around here that walking is brutal, but actually being on a bike, you get a little bit of wind, a little bit of air. It's not quite as hot. It's weird. It makes sense, but it doesn't. Anyways, I need to start doing that more. I don't know why I'm telling you this. It's not like you're going to email me and say, Dan, what's your problem? Listen, I got all kinds of problems. Do you have time? No. And I think work is going better. I've had a lot of really difficult barriers to break through in the last month, and I truly did not think I would miss my deadline. I did. I missed it, and I missed it by a month. And in my own defense, my original estimate was 90 days, but somehow, and my boss is a really good guy, but he's a really great salesman. Somehow he got me to yes on 60 days, and then it was like, oh, you know, then the stress level went up again. But mainly the issues have been mine, and I've been struggling with a lot of just, I don't know how to put it. I'd call it depression if the absence of any stress would leave me still depressed, but the reality is it's not really depression. It's more like I just don't give a crap. I don't. I have a hard time caring right now. The project I'm working on, thankfully, is within a space of reality where if the stars align just right, I can not care and still do the work. But even then, it's been a struggle. And I know the people out there are gonna say, Dan, don't complain. You have work, you have money. You know, you don't have to listen. And I'm not really complaining as much as just pointing out that, yeah, if you've been listening to my podcast, you'll notice that I've had a lot of ups and downs. And mainly it's because I have been stressed out about this project. On one level, it's the kind of thing that 10 years ago would have been perfect. So many things would have been perfect 10 years ago, or 20 years ago or 15 years ago. So many things would have been better then. Now, I just don't truly know what I'm writing code for. What's this reality that I'm writing code for? Because if it's the reality of the super robots and the Klaus Schwab, you don't own anything, then this project I'm on is kind of pointless. If it's the reality of everything turns to crap, then this project I'm working on is kind of pointless. If it's the reality of something like the empire falling apart, then maybe this project isn't pointless. Like maybe this project has traction, there's a future. Because, you know, things will be crazy if the empire collapses. Certainly if the US dollar goes to its true value, which is zero, and it's getting there quickly enough, I think. But if it gets to its true value of zero, then ultimately people will be in a situation where they're going to have to translate their work into something else. And so, yeah, you know, there's a scenario that isn't too terrible, but I just don't know. I don't know. The level of manipulation isn't getting better, it's getting worse. And the nature of the manipulations, the psyops, are getting more absurd and silly. So it's hard for me to see an end to this that doesn't end in some type of plague of madness. People are being driven insane. And the vaccination thing is even more absurd. There is really, absolutely no legitimate basis for forced vaccination. There never has been. There never will be, especially if you claim you're a common law country. Like, supposedly, our jurisprudence, our history of law goes back to, you know, jolly old England. Supposedly another common law country, a country where there are prescribed rights that every person has. But that's just not true, because the lawyers have figured out how to say but if you're a felon, but if you've been arrested, but if we detect THC in your bloodstream, but if you say something on Facebook that we don't think is something you should think or say, then maybe you don't have the rights you think you have. Because there's a lot of hairy butts. Add to reasons why the Constitution is absurd and a joke, because any time an institution takes your freedom and then gives it back to you, but with strings attached, that's basically what happened with the Constitution. They convinced a bunch of people, well, we're going to protect you with the Bill of Rights. Yeah. But that didn't really work. And it probably didn't work from the beginning. The very fact that there were issues like the Dred Scott case, the very fact that we could not figure out if an African-American slave was a person in the 19th century, according to the law. Think on this. Okay, this isn't the 12th century, this isn't the Crusades, we're not at war with the Moors. This is the 19th century. And for the most part, much of the world in the 19th century is simply casting slavery aside. Russia casting away the serfdom model, England formally declaring itself opposed to slavery. So in the 19th century, to even spend too much time asking the question, is an African American, is a slave, is a black slave a person? Of course they are people. But the law said no. The Constitution, the law, the thinkery said no. The organic legal jurisprudence said no. You're a certain percentage of a person, you're half a person, you're a quarter of a person, but you're not a full person. This is the absurdity of the Constitution and of any government saying to you, well, we'll give you security, but you're going to have to let us control your rights. Because that's what it's about. We're going to give you something, but those basic rights you think you have, we'll just hold on to those. We'll give them out to you every once in a while, and heck, we'll probably assign a fee to most of them. So you just have to pay a fee. You can drive, but you got to pay a fee. You can own a house, but you got to pay a fee. You can have a job. But you gotta pay a fee. That's what the income tax is, bros and sisters. The income tax is a fee you pay so you can work. The income tax is the fee you pay so you can go to work. This is absurd. This is crazy, but this is America. So complaining about $2 for, I don't know. I mean, imagine you're a kid and you get done going to the Coinstar and all you have left over from the voucher after it takes its 6 pennies for every buck is like $2.50. And you're not a member of the credit union, okay? But there's definitely a coin shortage. And you go up to the teller and you say, teller, you know, the coin shortage, whatever, here you go, here's my voucher, I'm just a kid. You don't really say that, but you're a kid. And on the voucher it says $2.50 and the teller looks at you and says, are you a member? And you say, no. And you get back 50 cents. If anything defined how crooked the United States economy is at this point, that transaction is a perfect example. It's a credit union. In the world of banking and finance, the credit unions are like the little puppies. They're so nice and so helpful. But no, they're all the same, folks. It's all the same system. They're all really just clipping coins, really. That's what you do at the end. You have a grift, you have fees, you have rentier models, you have the general neo-feudalism of collapse, and everybody clips a coin. Everybody takes a brick from the wall. And it all just falls apart eventually. Isn't it absurd to pay a fee to be free? It's like when people say freedom isn't free. Actually, technically speaking, freedom is free. It's consequences that people don't like talking about. It's the consequences. See, people, oh, freedom isn't free. No, no, no. You're missing the boat again, Mr. and Mrs. Monkey Herpes. Freedom is the state of nature. It's like asking, is gravity free? Is the flow of electrons free? Is the wave particle model of the photon free? Is the first derivative of x squared 2x, and is that free? Are those things free? Or do you gotta pay a fee? Hey, Isaac Newton. I just did an integral. Here's your 10 cents. Now fuck off. Freedom, or the state under which a person is allowed to make choices, as long as they don't violate the freedoms and rights of others. Freedom, autonomy, choice. This isn't like an extra. This isn't like fuel injection versus a carburetor. This is the state of nature. Human beings are born free. Every living thing is born free. Now, some living things have very little to do with their freedom in terms of complexity. They don't probably have much consciousness, so they don't have much need for it. And frankly, their world is their world and it's their business. But when you get to, you know, human beings and dolphins and orca whales and parrots, you know, and ravens and the octopus, you get to a level of intelligence where all of a sudden being able to make choices is powerful. because you can respond to nature, you can respond to the world. On the first day, and I think June the 22nd, 1941, the day that Mao Zedong killed Elvis, no kidding. June the 22nd, I believe. 1941. The day the Nazi armies invaded the Soviet Union. Their ally, their non-aggression pact ally. Everybody saw that coming. On the day that Nazi tanks were rolling into the portion of Poland that at that time the Soviets controlled, because, hey, spoiler alert, or actually rather true history, two countries, two nations invaded Poland in 1939. Wake up, tune in. The Germans and the Soviets. It wasn't just the Germans. We get taught the story of the Nazis because, hey, everybody hates Hitler, and let's be kind of vague on Joseph Stalin. But the fact is, Joseph Stalin was a major prick, and he murdered a lot of people. He murdered more people, arguably, than Hitler did, in lots of very brutal, terrible ways. I'm not saying Hitler was a good guy. This isn't like a game. You don't compare Ted Bundy to, like, I don't know, Eileen Wuornos. You don't compare serial killers to each other. You don't compare these mass murderers to each other. They are all brutal, terrible pieces of shit. They're terrible fucking people. But the point of this fucking story is about freedom. On June the 22nd, 1941, Soviet soldiers, Soviet officers, members of the Red Army were calling their command, do we have permission to get ammo? Do we have permission to shoot? Okay, you need to think on this. You got German tanks rolling at you. You got German machine guns tearing you up right and left. You have obvious invasion going on. The smart thing to do would be to do your job, right? You're Red Army, you're on the border, the Germans are invading, what do you do? If you feel like you have autonomy, that you can make choices, you probably fire back. But these Soviet officers, these soldiers, on the first day, even the first couple of days, were doing nothing. They were sitting on their hands because they were told to do nothing without being told to do it. In military science, this is called Befehl's tactic, or detailed orders, which means that your military philosophy is, if you haven't been told to do it, you don't. So even if the Germans are invading, you might pick up the phone and say, hey, can we go get the ammo? Can we go? Because these Soviet soldiers, a lot of them didn't even have ammunition. The ammunition was stored someplace else. Stalin was a paranoid guy, and he killed a lot of Soviet officers. So by this time, the Red Army was hollowed out and paranoid. And no one was going to do anything without Joseph Stalin saying it was okay. So for the most part, the first couple days, the Red Army was paralyzed. No one did anything because Stalin didn't have a clue. He was scared, and he got more scared. By the end of July 1941, Stalin's in hiding. In fact, let's just talk about this a bit. The Soviets came very close to total defeat in August of 1941, if not for a few gigantic strategic errors on the part of the German army. The Soviet Union would have been toppled by the autumn of 1941. When people say you can't defeat Russia, that's crap. In World War I, the Germans did defeat Russia. The reason why they could have their major offensive in the spring of 1918 is because by that point, they'd already signed a treaty with the, at that time, the new Soviet Union. And they'd already made the treaty, and they could already shift forces. And they already controlled and kept control of massive portions of Central Europe. So the net effect of the war, World War I, vis-a-vis Germans and Russia is that Germany ended up with a large chunk of territory. In fact, if you look at the map of Europe on Armistice Day, 1918, and you asked yourself who won World War I, in terms of points, you'd have to say Germany, but that's not what happened. Yeah. On the first day of Operation Barbarossa, as millions of Germans in multiple divisions, hundreds of divisions, and three major army groups, North, Center, and South, on the first day of Barbarossa, the Red Army, the soldiers and the officers, did not know if they could fight, did not know if they could return fire, did not know if they had a right to exist. Because that's really kind of what it comes down to. At the end of the day, a lot of soldiers will say in combat they fight for each other. So if you don't even know that you have the right to return fire to somebody who's firing at you, doesn't that also imply on a certain level you don't know that you have a right to exist? Like, forget the fact that you're defending other people. You're defending yourself also. So when I say freedom is essential, that's what I mean. When you do things artificial to take it away, society becomes deformed. People's interactions become problematic. You end up, best case scenario, with a hobbled, distorted version of what we would simply have in a voluntary society, in a non-coercive society. It's funny today because I am renting a room from a friend in Utah, and they have kids, and one of their kids is sitting outside, and the kid says, well, we have to have government. We can't live without government. And I said, okay, I got a question for you. And this basically, it has to do with three options, A, B, and C. Let's say that you're going to go mow the lawn. What would you prefer? To mow the lawn by choice because you want to help out, that's A. To mow the lawn by choice but you're also getting paid, that's B. Or C, to have your parent, mom, or dad chase you around with a hammer and scare you and maybe even like do worse things so that they can force you and scare you and threaten you into mowing the lawn. Well, when I put it that way, the kid said, I want B, I want to get paid. Well, of course you do. And you just made a voluntary choice. And that's the way things should work. So when people say we have to have government, what they're really saying is, I've been told that the only way we can solve problems is by threatening each other. That's it. That is it. If you've given in to the idea that we have to have government, we can't live without it, we got to have a social contract, constitutional thing, ye Bastille Day, blah, 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 they killed Elvis. If you bought into all that statist nonsense, what you really bought into, the crux of it philosophically, is you don't believe that people can solve problems without force. You don't believe that there's any way people can work together constructively without people threatening each other, without hiring special people to go around and point guns at each other, to point guns at you. Like, I can't get it done unless somebody has a gun to my head. Think of the pandemic or the plague or whatever you want to call this monkey herpes nonsense. And as a reminder, if you're one of these smaller case, well, Dan, I know that it's mostly not going to kill people, but it's real because I got sick and my uncle got sick and the Chinese, shut up, okay? Because you've already lost the argument. If I'm playing basketball at the local park, me, potbelly, middle-aged, diabetic, probably pretty close to my first major stroke, and you see me dribbling a basketball, is your logical assumption at that point that I'm a professional NBA basketball player? Is that the conclusion you want to draw? Because you see me dribbling a ball? So if you've settled on the COVID is kind of real because I know somebody that got kind of sick, all I can tell you is that does not equal a plague or a pandemic. Whatever it is, it's not a professional basketball player. It is not there. So even if you want to tell me you think it's kind of sort of maybe a little bit real, shut up. You've just told me it's not a pandemic. You just told me it's not a plague, which means it's either colossal stupidity, ding, 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 why are you taking the vaccine from the people that are this stupid, or it's kind of on purpose. And I'm thinking it's the latter, not the former, Mr. Hanlon. But again, if you want to go the Hanlon route and say it's all stupidity, then why are you taking the vaccine from these stupid people? Why? Why? If you've already come to the conclusion they're idiots, why are you taking a medical procedure from them? Because you've been told to? Because you've been threatened? Is that the only way any of us can envision fixing things, solving things, working together? Guess what, folks? I believe very, very soon we will all find out what the best answer is. Okay, we will. I think it's coming. I think a time is coming where you're going to have to depend upon people, and you won't just be able to go around threatening them. If you're Mr. and Mrs. Monkey Herpes Homeowners Association, I'll call the cops on speed dial. That world is over. I bet you probably get excited about the reset because it means this nonsense can continue, but it cannot. It can't. Freedom is the state of nature. The absence of freedom, the taking away of your choices, that's special. That's the kind of thing that produces absurdities, like what happened on June the 22nd, 1941, like our economy, the way it works right now. The fact that something like that transaction, that $2, could even occur is an indication that people are not allowed to make rational choices. If that woman was allowed to make a choice versus just following policy, which is essentially, you know, Bethel's tactic, if she had been allowed to make a decision, I would wager, especially if you think the coin shortage is real, I would wager to say, you know what, you've already paid the 6 pennies for every buck, and we're probably already getting a cut. So, you know, since it's such a small amount of money, I'm going to waive the $2. But like the kid told me, we can't live without government. We can't live without people threatening us. We can't live without people following stupid policies. If all of a sudden we were allowed to live free, what dangerous monstrosities would arrive? We might start building nuclear weapons. We might start invading countries. We might start spying on people. Are you following me? No, actually, the thing that people are most afraid of are consequences. And that's the one thing government's really good at hiding. Or, well, they're not good at hiding. They're good at pretending to hide. But they love hiding consequences. They love taking problems and solving them by burying them under concrete or something, or dropping bombs on them. But the key thing is government loves to hide consequences. They do. The way they do accounting is a perfect example. The way they manage their money is a perfect example of hiding consequences. The way they play these games with language, deficit versus debt, I mean, it's all nonsense and it's about hiding consequences. The way that they work with the Federal Reserve to monkey with how we measure inflation, unemployment, and other numbers is another way of hiding consequences. So when people say things like, well, we can't have freedom, we can't be free. No, what you're really saying is you kind of are addicted to hiding consequences. You're addicted to what the government does. They give you a magical story. They come up with magical goal-seeking formulas for their spreadsheets. And then, voila, you can say things like Social Security is financially secure until the year 20 whatever. Boblimp doc. The year of Boblimtok, when the creatures of the night will enseed themselves. A time is coming, right? A time of terror, a time of coyote madness, a time of water buffalo reaching for the stars, a time of rocket ships made out of porcupine pelts, a time when we will build bubbles and travel to space. Yeah, so I guess this has been a rant. And what have we learned? Well, we've learned that they definitely screw you at the drive-thru. They'll take the $2. They don't care. We've learned that coin shortages are kind of absurd. We've also learned that a lot of people will say things like, we gotta have government. But when you actually address the issue of coercion, they would choose to solve problems without it. This is a fun test. Anytime you run into a statist, just ask them the lawn mowing question. Would you like to mow the lawn for money, mow the lawn for free, or mow the lawn with somebody having a sniper with its crosshairs on your head, and it's telling you if you don't do it, you'll end up dead. Which one of those options is best? Most people don't choose the sniper. And if they do, it's because they got issues, you know? And they should probably just seek out a dom and have somebody give them a spanking once a week for $50. If you're a submissive type, don't take it out on the rest of us. You can be a libertarian. You just have to understand your desires. You want to be beaten and punished and yelled at, because you were raised Catholic, right, like me. The nuns had a cheese paddle. It wasn't for cheese. It wasn't for wine. It was for you and me. Yeah, if you're raised Catholic, you know about the cheese paddle, maybe. You know about going to the nun's office and bending over and pulling down your navy blue corduroy pants per the uniform of the Catholic school, and Sister Whatever Pants takes her little cheese paddle and spanks your bare bottom. And when you start to reach puberty, like in 1982, and they're still doing it, like when you're 13, and some nun in her 40s is spanking your bare bottom with a wooden paddle, that's a little kinky. A little gross. Cheese paddle. I think maybe that's the crux of the issue for many people that are statist voters, people who believe the system works. A lot of them, if you go through the process of asking them, would you want to mow the lawn being chased by wild dogs, or would you like to get paid, or just do it voluntarily, people will choose those other options before the wild dogs or the sniper or the weird crooked dude chasing them with a knife. And it makes sense. But every once in a while, you find somebody that says, no, I need to be chased by a clown with a knife. I need the sniper's little red dot on my chest. I won't wake up in the morning unless somebody is threatening to kill me. You meet those people. And the best solution is say, listen, buddy, I was raised Catholic too. I was beaten pretty well at times, you know, by the nuns. And so if you feel like you need to submit, then you probably have a sexual issue. And you can pay people. There are people in usually the weekly, whatever town you're in, there's some corporate-owned weekly that looks all fringe, but in reality is owned by one company. You open up the weekly, you go to classifieds, somebody's out there says, I'm a dom, a dominant, I will spank you, I will whip you. You'll have a magical safe word like raccoon. Just say raccoon if it gets too hard. Just say raccoon if I beat you too hard. Raccoon. 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 I loved raccoon. Raccoon. So maybe you're just a submissive. If you feel like you have to vote, if you feel like you can't mow the lawn unless you're being chased by a clown with a knife, then maybe you really are just a submissive and you just need to pay somebody a little bit of money. And if you don't have the money, find somebody. There are probably people out there who will spank you for free because they're dominant types and they're the other side of the wretched statist coin. They have issues they need to work through. Maybe they're ex-nuns, ex-priests, whatever. But the point is, there are people out there that got their issues on both sides of that coin, and you could probably get that transaction done for free. Worst case, $2. Maybe that's what the teller was doing. Pocketing the $2 to get her Mormon spanking, Utah style. Maybe she took the money and put it in her purse so she could meet Lenny. Lenny, the master of distress. Remember, honey, raccoon. Yeah, this has been a big, big rant. Unlikely to end up on the radio, but it could. You never know. If we run out of show ideas, we just go through and we eliminate the fuck and the shit and the bitch and the other words that I might not even say because even I have lines I won't cross. But do I? Cunt. All those words must be removed. Because people are afraid. And the nuns will spank me. So if you're out there on this Wednesday, July the 14th, Bastille Day, and you're wondering to yourself, Dan, am I the trouble spike? Dan, am I the wall? Dan, am I the window or the canal? Am I the ceiling? Am I the floor? Dan, am I a tunnel? Am I a gopher? Am I a whore? You go out into the world on Wednesday, Bastille Day, the day they killed Elvis. The day they killed Elvis and dropped him in the Seine River. The river that's insane. The river in Paris. They killed Elvis. They killed Elvis, you know? They killed Elvis. You have a great day.